From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to The Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm The Miracle Hunter. Hey, the summer is racing by, isn't it, everyone? We have a great show ahead for you today. Each and every week, we present new stories of miracles and new stories about saints and Catholic devotions. And one of those famous devotions that we mention all the time on this program is the Rosary, of course. And, of course, those people with the pious devotion, we also focus on the miracles that have been attributed to the Rosary. And there's a great new book out by author Gabe Castillo called The Power of the Rosary from Sophia Institute Press. He'll be joining us today to talk about some of those great Marian miracles, whether it be Lepanto or St. Dominic receiving the Rosary or Our Lady of Fatima or Our Lady of Lourdes. We see the Rosary playing such a prominent part in all those great Marian devotions. We'll also be joined by Patrick O'Hearn about a most fascinating topic that relates to exorcisms and the saints who appear in them. So you know, of course, that exorcist priests will perform exorcisms and attempt to extricate the devil from a possessed person. But did you know that on various occasions throughout Christian history, and maybe each time an exorcism happens, I don't really know, a saint is there present in a very special way that those people who are possessed react to it, and it helps free them from that bondage. So we're so excited today. We'll be talking with Patrick O'Hearn, co-author of the book, The Most Powerful Saints in Exorcisms, available from Sophia Institute Press. He'll be joining us later in today's show. You can check out my series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter. Every week I talk about the different episodes that are airing, and we've been filming lots of new episodes from all around the world, South America and Europe and otherwise, that will be coming to your screen soon. But there are episodes that air each and every week on EWTN. You can tune into EWTN to see the latest episodes of Explore with the Miracle Hunter. And the one that's coming up is Assisi. The Italian city of Assisi gave rise to two of history's most celebrated saints. I follow the life of St. Francis, and who was the first person to bear the stigmata, and St. Clare, his wonder-working follower. So check that one out this Saturday at 5 p.m. Central Time. And you can also check out my episode on EWTN of They Might Be Saints about Francis Xavier Silos, the life of Francis Xavier Silos. He was a renowned confessor, spiritual director, and leader of missions throughout the United States in the early 19th century. There's a promising new miracle that's being attributed to him, and that is the episode of They Might Be Saints about Francis Xavier Silos. Later in the show, we'll be looking at the Might Be Saint of the Day. For today, we've got Blessed Franciscate Doctera, who lived from 1910 to 1944 from Poland. And also the 365 Days with Mary Project looks at the Virgin Mary of Chiavenea from Italy in the year 1648. The question of the week, what other saints have appeared throughout history in visions? And the miracle of the day is a Lourdes healing miracle that happened in 1891. Let's take a look at the miracle news. We do this every week where we talk about the miracles happening around the world and those things that relate to miracles. And this isn't really miracle news per se as far as a new miracle happening, but it's pretty interesting. Just last year, we saw that the Vatican released its new norms for deciding on Marian apparitions, and they applied those norms in a decision on Medjugorje, the first major decision from the Vatican about these alleged apparitions happening in Bosnia-Herzegovina. And it received the Church's highest form of approval these days, which is the nihil obstat, meaning nothing obstructs, and the devotion is encouraged. And as a result, we see headlines today that the Vatican's decision has sparked a big surge in Medjugorje pilgrimages. So, on the 44th anniversary of the reported apparitions of the Virgin Mary, the number of pilgrims gathering at the shrine there is on the rise. And it follows, of course, the issuance of the Vatican's decision of nihil obstat. And as I mentioned, in September of 2024, the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith, with the approval of Pope Francis, gave approval for the devotion linked to Medjugorje, recognizing the abundant spiritual fruits at that sanctuary of the Queen of Peace
And it didn't make a decision on the supernatural character of the Marian apparitions as it had done in cases of many Marian apparitions throughout history. And the parish priest in Medjugorje, Father Pavicic, said today that a noticeable increase in pilgrim numbers has been observed since the note from the Dicastery that was published last year. And the quote is, "The only thing that has changed is how people are coming who hadn't come before," said Father Pavicic. He added that many of the new pilgrims who were previously skeptical have now been encouraged by the Vatican stance, which now has led to a rise in pilgrimage numbers. And according to the local tourist board, tens of thousands of pilgrims arrived for the 44th anniversary of these Marian apparitions on June 26th. And according to its director, Ante Kozina, in addition to Bosnia and Herzegovina and Croatia, the largest organized pilgrimage groups came from Italy, France, the Republic of Ireland, Poland, Ukraine, Brazil, Spain, and, of course, the United States. And this is all based on the claims of the Medjugorje visionaries, which first apparition happened on June 25th, 1981, and the Vatican had established a special commission to investigate the phenomena. And since the beginning of this phenomenon in 1981, 50 million pilgrims have visited Medjugorje. And so that is the miracle news for this week. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week. We ask a trivia question, give it a prize to an email that writes in the fastest with the correct answer. If you want a chance at winning, you can send an email to questions@miraclehunter.com or send me a message through the website miraclehunter.com. So last week's question was, who is the youngest American venerable, blessed, or saint? And we had a lot of people writing in with different answers. And the correct answer is St. Kateri Tekakwitha. The age of her death was 24. She died in 1680. And she's the youngest native-born American to be canonized. Kateri was known, was from New York, known as the Lily of the Mohawks, and she converted to Catholicism at the age of 19. And other people responded with the answer of Blessed Miriam Teresa Demjanovic. She died at the age of 26, and she's a blessed. She was beatified in 2014, becoming the first American-born woman to be beatified on U.S. soil. And the youngest saint to be canonized in the Universal Church, not American, of course, but St. Dominic Savio, canonized at age 14. We saw where he's buried there in Turin on my recent trip to Italy. And that is the question for Catholic Pub Trivia this week. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking to Patrick O'Hearn about his brand new book, The Most Powerful Saints in Exorcisms, from Sophia Institute Press. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. It's kind of an interesting thing, I find, that people, when we talk about some of the great miracles in our church, and whether it's Eucharistic miracles or visions of Mary or healing miracles found at Lourdes or otherwise, weeping statues, people get very interested in those things. But I've definitely met people, lots of people, who have a certain curiosity, at least, about how it all works on the other side. We talk about these great miracles of light, you might say, these moments when God is shining down and working these great things, great miracles in our lives, big and small. But then there is the darker side. We might say going from supernatural with God to preternatural when we talk about the work of the devil. And of course, we don't necessarily preoccupy ourselves with these things or focus on these things in a big way, but in a very interesting way, existence of the devil, the activity of the devil, and the efforts to combat him all sort of prove this supernatural outlook on life. We're showing what we're made for in the end. And so there's a great new book that's out, and it's out from it's a great new book that's out from Patrick O'Hearn and Charles Frown. And that is The Most Powerful Saints in Exorcisms, What Exorcists Want You to Know. And it's a truly fascinating book because it gives us that insight into what goes on at exorcisms and what we can learn about them. And it's an incredible piece for Sophie Institute Press. And so we're so excited today to welcome one of the co-authors of that book, and that's Patrick O'Hearn. Welcome back to the show today, Patrick.
Hey, thank you for having me, Michael.
And so this book is of great interest to me, and I'm sure many people out there who have an interest, a curiosity about what goes on at exorcisms. And I think this is such a great way to frame it, of course. We talk about those saints who have a role in exorcism, perhaps appearing in exorcisms or had some sort of ability to fight the devil while they're alive. But what inspired you to turn your attention to this topic?
You know, Charles and I, it was kind of like a perfect match because I've kind of devoted my life to writing on the saints. I love the saints, and I know how much you love the saints too, Michael. And Charles has done several books with Slain Dragons Press. He's self-published several books. He's an expert in the occult, and he's interviewed several exorcists. So I thought, you know, just really the Holy Spirit, we're good friends. We live close to each other. We just thought, let's work on a book together that combines my love for the saints with his love for exorcisms. And so that we did. So we just interviewed, there's about 15 different exorcists that are out there, you know, that we got permission to use, you know, from Father Rippinger, Father Amorth, and then several, you know, exorcists that are currently out in the field, and some of them wish to be anonymous. And so, you know, one of the couple exorcists that I really enjoyed speaking with was Father Vincent Lampert, former exorcist from Diocese of Indianapolis, and then Monsignor Rossetti. We use a lot of his material. So again, we want to show the positive side. I know it's, you know, exorcism sees negative, but there's always this focus too on the devil, and we give the devil a lot of credit, and we shouldn't give him too much, nor should we ignore him. There's a right balance. But in this book, we want to show like the positive side, which are the saints, and the demons. They call the saints the assassins. In our own spiritual life, like Charles and I want to bring a greater devotion to the saints and families. You know, in the back of our book, we have the Litany of the Saints, and that's part of the ritual of exorcism. In the beginning, you know, an exorcist, he will kneel down and he will pray this litany, and often he's going to get reactions. You know, the exorcists don't see the saints, but the possessed person does. And so when they say these certain names, you know, again, this is in our book, you know, all the whole litany, you know, they'll get a reaction from the possessed person. And then they kind of have an idea, okay, what saint should we keep invoking more? And it's almost like you're going to a medical doctor, right? You try to get this diagnosis. What are the symptoms here? And so they get to the bottom of it. And often it'll be a certain vice that possessed person is maybe dealing with, or potentially they have a great devotion to that saint. And so, again, why a certain saint appears in an exorcism kind of remains a mystery, but it really is incredible that these saints are showing up, and the demons, they hate the saints.
And one question that I do have is that we talk about saints appearing in exorcisms to aid the exorcist priest, perhaps, to aid the person who is suffering in that moment. But there are two ways to look at the saints dealing with the devil. Perhaps in the lives of the saints, you see these people blessed with great supernatural gifts, the ability to cast out demons in life. And then we see some of these saints appearing or being invoked in exorcisms themselves. Are these typically the same saints? Is Padre Pio known for working to cast out demons while he was alive and in these appearances afterwards? What's the connection between those two sides?
A great question. You know, there's a lot of the saints that we're seeing in exorcisms. You know, for instance, John Paul II, you know, obviously every bishop is an exorcist, right? But he performed a couple exorcists, even as a pope, and we have that in the beginning of the story. And so I think there's kind of a combination of both. There's saints who were exorcists when they were alive, and they appear in exorcisms. And then there's other saints that just, like St. Carlo Acutis, right? He's appearing. We're seeing him a lot in exorcisms, and it really has to do with the relevance at the time. So the certain vices that people are experiencing. So Padre Pio did, in our book, we have an account of him where he did perform an exorcism on a young teenage girl, but he was not an exorcist per se. So again, it's a mystery why a lot of these saints are showing up. But I think it's definitely a combination of both exorcists and then those who were maybe battled. A lot of times they battled the devil. You know, St. Gemma Galgani, she's one that keeps appearing a lot. She fought the devil when she was alive. And so I think, you know, that merit, God rewards these saints because they defeated the devil on earth, that they are able to assist us from heaven even more.
Amazing. We're talking today with Patrick O'Hearn, co-author of the book, The Most Powerful Saints in Exorcisms, or What Exorcists Want You to Know. And, of course, the greatest of all saints is Our Lady. And why do demons have such a strong reaction to Our Lady being invoked or being present in an exorcism? And why do they call her a nuclear bomb, for example, in your book?
Yeah, that was... Father Ripperger has a great line. He calls Our Lady the nuclear bomb. And when she shows up, you know, our chapter 7 says Our Lady slams Satan's door. When she shows up, the exorcists call her the closer. So it's over. The exorcism is about to end. And they hate Mary. They hate the name of Our Lady. And it causes them to fear. And because she's more, she humiliates them more because she's so humble. You know, like Jesus, the demons say this, like they fear Mary more than God. It's because of her, you know, again, she just humiliates them as a creature, you know, not as the creator. And so they're more humbled by her. And just the power on certain feast days, you know, one of the relics we talk about in our book, you know, the importance of saint relics, like those are another thing. You know, I think in the church today, there's almost like we've become too casual with relics, and we go and pray and we just think, there's just something else. But when these exorcists bring these relics, for instance, the veil of the Blessed Mother, when that comes in an exorcism, like the demons hate that. They hate these stones of Saint Michael. Saint Michael appeared in the cave, and now this year, named after Saint Michael, right? And but these stones, and lay people can get these stones. They're quasi relics, you could say. But we have the information in our book on that, where to get them from Italy, and. But these relics are so powerful. And Charles and I, you know, we've talked about this, is, you know, there's this longing for the saints to be reunited to their bodies, right? Like we're made to have that glorified body in heaven. And so on earth, there's a certain power, you might say, with these relics that, again, that can help, you know, help in exorcisms. And I encourage families, like, you know, when you go and pray in front of these relics, like, you know, really take that seriously, you know, because these saints, they are just waiting to help us.
Yeah, and I've interviewed numerous exorcists on this radio show and talked to them personally, and the use of relics to me is one of the most eye-opening things that people can talk about when they talk about relics or exorcisms, because a lot of people say, aren't we dealing with somebody who has psychological disorders, who just needs some sort of medical treatment, not necessarily an exorcism? Sort of, there's this a medieval practice on a modern problem, you might say. But when exorcists talk about relics, it's very interesting to me that the possessed person is able to identify the pocket that a relic is held in, or the saint whose relic is in the room. I think that's a little bit chilling in my ways. They say, why is the relic of Padre Pio here, for example? Talk a little bit about anything that you learned from speaking to these exorcists, the ability of the possessed to be able to, or having a reaction specifically to a relic, maybe not even knowing it was there.
Yeah, in our book, on the front cover, you know, Charles and I chose this image. It's an image of St. Francis Borgia, incredible saint. He was an exorcist. He was the father of 8 children. He's one of my favorite saints. He's kind of appeared in my life recently. And he, you know, after his wife died, he became a Jesuit. And he knew St. Ignatius of Loyola. And on front cover, there's a picture of his crucifix. And we kind of chose that image specifically. It's a famous painting, but that crucifix would, like, I think it would ooze blood or whatever. But it was handed on to, like, his, you know, grandchildren or whatever, and it was taken over to South America. And one time there was this person that was possessed, and they were, like, going nuts. They couldn't figure out why, and it was his crucifix was in the next door, in the next room. And I think it just shows you that, like, you know, that these, even the things that the saints used, you know, they just have this power. I mean, it's all the power comes from God, right? All these, you know, these relics, I mean, they have no power in themselves. It's from God. But, you know, I also think, there's something with the relics too, is these saints, they consumed, you know, the Eucharist. You know, I'm blessed with a first class relic of Saint Therese's parents. I love them, and I keep it right by my desk. And one thing I want to side note on that, you know, we interviewed Adam Bly, he helps with exorcisms, and he said whenever Saint Therese appears, her parents also appear now. And I just think it's incredible that these saints, whether it's a relic, you know, hiding in another room, or sometimes they'll touch the relic, you know, to the back of, you know, a person's head, they go nuts. And it just shows you that again, the power of the saints and the power of the sacramentals, that, you know, that God is really giving us all the tools to free these people that are possessed, to help them to find healing.
Absolutely. We're talking today with Patrick O'Hearn, co-author of the book, The Most Powerful Saints in Exorcisms, What Exorcists Want You to Know. And as we wrap up the interview today, Patrick, what is a practical way that people can engage with your book or can cultivate a deeper devotion to the saints to get their intercession in their daily lives? What's the best path forward for people?
Yeah. You know, in the back of the book, you know, we have a question and answer with exorcists, and then we have, like, you know, basically a renewed devotion to the saints. And so one thing that Charles and I, again, in this back of this book, we have a litany of the saints, which goes back, you know, many centuries. You know, you hear that at weddings, at ordinations, but I really encourage families to get on their knees. You know, maybe it's after the rosary. They don't have to do it every night, but, you know, to pray to these saints, invoke them, you know, after you do the rosary, especially on a feast day. You know, we've lost that mentality. The saints, even the exorcists talk about this, they have more power on their feast days. More graces are coming. And so we can't neglect that, you know, especially, you know, my son is St. Jude, and a lot of people that have children, you know, name them after the saints. Go to Mass on that feast day and celebrate that saint and invoke them, you know, especially titles of Our Lady, too. So I think that these are really powerful, just to never neglect the saints. They are our best friends, and they want to help us. You know, they want to help us whatever vices we have. They don't want to just help in exorcisms, but they want to help us. And they're everywhere. Even when we go to Holy Mass, right? I think people forget that. And, you know, it's great that they're in these exorcisms, but when we go to Mass, we are surrounded by a cloud of witnesses. So we can never neglect that reality.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Patrick O'Hearn, for joining us on today's program to talk about your new book, about the most powerful saints in exorcisms, available from Sophia Institute Press. Thank you so much, Patrick, for joining us on today's program.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
God bless. That was Patrick O'Hearn talking to us about Sophia Institute Press's new book about the most powerful saints in exorcisms. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. And I love the emails. I get lots of good and strange and interesting emails rolling into my inbox every single day, and we like to pick one to share with you each week. And I also love answering questions in person, and I give talks around the country, perhaps 15 to 20, where I travel to a parish or a shrine or a conference, and I talk about miracles, of course, whether it's Eucharistic miracles or Marian apparitions or how the church investigates the supernatural or how the sainthood process works. And those are some of my favorite topics. But I love speaking for about 45 minutes to an hour and then opening up to questions. And it's pretty interesting what people are thinking about. So send me an email if you'd like to have me speak at your parish. You can go to the contact tab on the miraclehunter.com website, and you can get me a message that way. But the question that came in this week is, what other saints besides Mary appear in apparitions? Thank you, James.
Well, thanks, James, for your question. And it's a good one. I think, of course, we pay attention most to the apparitions of Mary, given that she is the greatest of all saints, and the number of apparitions of the Virgin Mary far outnumber anyone else, including the apparitions of her own son, Jesus. So when we talk about the number of Marian apparitions, we talk about a number of something like 2,500 have been claimed throughout Christian history. A much smaller number, of course, have been recognized by Rome, something like 30 after the year, after the 1545 to 1563 Council of Trent established the investigation of Marian apparitions. Prior to that, there are many, many others, but we see something like 30 that have been recognized by a local bishop, and a smaller number recognized by Rome. But to focus on the question itself, what about other saints appearing in Marian apparitions? Well, there have been a few of Saint Joseph, just a handful, that have any sort of recognition by the church. And then we have the apparition of Saint Anne, Saint Anne de Auray, and that's a very famous apparition because this year in France, in Brittany, they celebrate that, the 400-year anniversary of the grandmother of Jesus, and that's Saint Anne, of course. And of course, we have Padre Pio appearing at various times and in various ways throughout history, and other saints who have been said to appear. But by and large, the actual number of apparitions that have ever been recognized by the Church, we might say there are many recognized related to the Virgin Mary, a couple related to Saint Joseph, and this one to from Saint Anne. And all the other ones, they kind of go in according to pious tradition, you might say. There are many stories of saints appearing, but the Church has never formally investigated, or doesn't typically formally investigate these apparitions. But this one related to Saint Anne in the 400th anniversary there in France, that's a big one, an example right up the alley that you're asking about. So thank you so much, James, for your question. And if you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe I'll be answering your question on the air next week. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary project. We do this every week where we talk about the Marian devotion of the day as it lines up each week, each day on the calendar year. You all know Fatima, May 13th, or Lourdes, February 11th, or Guadalupe, December 12th. But believe it or not, for a different day on the calendar, there's a different Marian devotion that lines up exactly to the day's date. And we see how Mary is honored and loved all around the world. And people can check out more about this project if they go to the Facebook page for 365 Days with Mary, or they pick up the book by the same title, 365 Days with Mary. For today's date, we have Mary of Scivoneia from Italy in the year 1648. And the story goes that on the night of August 23rd in 1648, as in watching the sea in the vicinity of the Church of San Leonardo in the Tower of the Dark, a knight, Antonio Rufio, had a vision of the Blessed Virgin, and she appeared sitting on a seat on the sea with arms outstretched, calmed and the astonished man, and declared herself as the Madonna of Scivoneia. Then she asked him to commission a painting in her likeness for devotion to her, and Our Lady appeared two more times before he believed in the reality of these visions and provided what she requested. And he appointed a painter, Cianardella of Corigliano, to paint a portrait of the Virgin Mary as she appeared. And that is the Blessed Virgin of Scivoneia from Italy in the year 1648. For more information on this fascinating devotion or any of the hundreds of other Marian devotions from around the world, you can go to 365dayswithmary.com. Let's take a look at the miracle of the day. We do this every week where we talk about a miracle that happened on this date in Christian history. And today's date is a Lord's miracle. It relates to the healing of Amélie Chagnon and Clementine Trouve at Lourdes, which occurred in August of 1891, and both were medically validated and recognized by the Catholic Church. And now we see a number of something like 72 miracles that have been recognized throughout the history of Lourdes after those apparitions in 1858 to 14-year-old St. Bernadette Subaru. Let's take a look at the sainthood news. We also do this every week. We try to keep you up to date on those saints coming down the pipeline, you might say. And every month or a couple months, the Pope will meet with the head of the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints, and they'll promulgate a decree regarding new cases for venerables and blesseds and saints. And so the latest news is that last month, the Holy Father, Pope Leo XIV, received an audience. His Eminence Cardinal Marcello Semeraro, the prefect for the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints. And during this audience, the Supreme Pontiff authorized the same dicastery to promulgate a decree regarding the heroic virtues of the servant of God, Teresa Tambelli, born Maria Olga. She's a professed nun of the Daughters of Charity of St. Vincent de Paul, born January 17, 1884, in Reverie in Italy. And she died on February 23rd, 1964, in Cagliari in Italy as well. And so according to the website for the Dicastery for the Cause of Saints, they said she was a professed nun of the Daughters of Charity of St. Paul. She devoted herself steadfastly to education and Christian formation of even the most disadvantaged children and youth. And she lived her vocation faithfully, expressing it with joy in the places where her superiors sent her to work. And that is today's might be saint of the day, or the sainthood news for today, Teresa Tambelli. She is now a venerable. With one miracle, she will be known as Blessed Teresa, and a second miracle will make her Saint Teresa Tambelli. Let's take a look at the might be saint of the day. We do this every week where we talk about those people on the path to sainthood whose death anniversaries line up on the calendar day for today. And so for today, August 23rd, we have Blessed Francesco Dacterra, who lived from 1910 to 1944 in Poland. And he is known as one of the 108 martyrs of World War II. And he was a priest in the Diocese of Gniezno in Poland. And he was a prefect of the secondary school there as well. And he was arrested on September 17, 1939, during the Nazi occupation. And he was imprisoned in several places before ending the Dachau concentration camp, where he was tortured and used in medical experimentation. He is a martyr. And again, he was born in 1910 on September 22nd in Poland, and he died there in Dachau in Germany. And he died in 1944 of a reaction to the pseudoscientific medical experiments that were conducted on him. And he was declared venerable by Pope John Paul II in 1989, and also Pope John Paul II declared him a blessed on June 13, 1999 as well. And he is today's might be saint of the day, Blessed Franciszek Dacterra, and with one miracle, Blessed Franciszek will go and become a saint. And for those people who are interested in They Might Be Saints, you can check out my television series, They Might Be Saints, which airs on EWTN. Go to theymightbesaints.com for more information on each week's show. You can also pick up my book, They Might Be Saints, available from EWTN Religious Catalog, which is at EWTNRC.com. I think it's my best book. I feature the lives of 24 Americans, venerables and blesseds, those people before they have all their miracles and are declared saints by Rome. And I go through their lives and I talk a little bit about the sainthood process and the search for miracles as well. But check that one out. They Might Be Saints, available at EWTNRC.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking about a brand new book, The Power of the Rosary, by Gabe Castillo. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter. On EWTN, here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. One of my favorite Marian devotions, and maybe devotions period, is that of the Holy Rosary. And we talk about it in different ways. People have such great success with praying the rosary, some miracles big and small. And it's a great way to honor Mary and to reflect on those decades and those stories of the from the life of Christ. And for as the miracle hunter, of course, I love these stories where the rosary intersects with the miraculous. We see great devotion to the rosary and some of the greatest miracles in history having some sort of connection with the rosary. Well, we're so excited today to be joined by Gabe Castillo. He's the author of this brand new book called The Power of the Rosary from Sophia Institute Press. Welcome to the program today, Gabe.
Michael, thank you so much for having me, and thanks for all your work you do to promote Marian devotion and the causes of our Lord.
Absolutely. It's great to connect with you today, and I'm excited about this new book that you have. What inspired you to put your focus on this devotion, which, of course, has gained traction in recent years, but somebody might look at it and say, isn't this an older devotion? Why pay attention to it now?
Right. So I believe that there's a renewal of grace happening, that our Lord wishes to renew the earth through His Blessed Mother. And when I had a really miraculous and powerful conversion in college, I was struggling with lust. And I had found that when I prayed the rosary, the temptation was still there, but it was something that I now had, like I could fight the battle. It wasn't like an insurmountable temptation. And when I went to research more this beautiful devotion that was leading me out of sin and opening me to so many graces, the only resource available at the time was St. Louis de Montfort's The Secret of the Rosary, which is a spiritual classic. And it was 300 years old, and a lot had happened in the church up until that point. And I was encountering amongst my peers sort of a devotional relativism, kind of like it doesn't matter what you pray, just as long as you pray. And that was very much in contradiction to what St. Louis de Montfort, at least, was teaching about the Holy Rosary, that to grow in holiness, there are objective things that have to happen in the life of every single Catholic. And I would come across quotes, many that people have heard, that after the sacrifice of the Mass, the Rosary is the greatest prayer. You know, Francis de Sales urged and encouraged everybody to pray the Rosary every single day. Countless popes have echoed that same sentiment about the power of the rosary as an efficacious prayer. But too many Catholics, I believe, see the rosary as kind of like a pious devotion because Mary said it at an apparition, when in reality, it's actually theological genius. It unlocks the door to every aspect of the spiritual life. So this is just a project that's been on my mind and my heart for many, many years.
Wonderful. Well, we're excited to talk to you today about some of the great miracles of the rosary. And I'm guessing that listeners out there have their own favorite miracle stories. And we could talk about the Battle of Lepanto, where we see the rosary turning the tide of Western civilization, you might say, in that epic battle. But let's turn our attention to the beginnings of the rosary. We might point to St. Dominic. According to pious tradition, he had a vision of Mary and was granted the rosary. Talk a little bit about the history of the rosary and how those storied apparitions to St. Dominic had a role.
Oh, absolutely. And I personally believe that by looking at the origins of the rosary and seeing how the rosary developed over time, brings clarity and answers a lot of questions. And even the devil will even use people who are ignorant to try and dissuade people from praying the rosary and say things like, oh, well, you know, that's a pious devotion, or just many errors can be dispelled. So I just want to highlight one beautiful connection between St. Dominic and Our Lady of Fatima that many people don't put together. So St. Dominic, when he was baptized, his godmother saw a star on his forehead that came out of his head. And during moments of deep contemplation, his peers would also see this star all of a sudden out of nowhere begin to glow. St. Dominic was a canon of the Cathedral of Osma, and so when he was first a priest, he would wear all white. And one evening, when he was in frustration and sorrow over not being able to reach hardened sinners, specifically the Albigensians, he began to take the discipline. He went into deep fasting. He went into long prayer, beseeching the Mother of God for a solution. How can I reach hardened sinners? How can I call down the mercy of God like in the New Testament? So he was in deep prayer several days, no eating, no sleeping, when suddenly, in the midst of his prayer, a fireball came out of the sky, and this is according to Dominican tradition, a fireball came out of the sky accompanied by three angels hurtling at him. All of a sudden, this fireball disappears, And in its place is standing the Mother of God. And she says to him, in this type of warfare, the battering ram has been and always will be the angelic salutation. And she encourages him to preach my Psalter. Many people don't know at this time the word rosary was not used. The Hail Mary that was being prayed at this time was only the first half. So Jesus, Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death, was not present when Mary's telling Dominic to preach the Psalter. And the church referred to this apparition of Mary to Saint Dominic as the apparition of Our Lady of the Rosary. This is relevant because if you look at Fatima and what's happening around the 20th century is that modernism and a lack of faith in the divine and a watering down of higher ideals to focus on lower things. And so Our Lady can see this, and throughout the apparitions, she tells the children at Fatima, she says, I will tell you who I am in October. And so in October, as many people know, the apparition of Our Lady of Fatima, she's wearing like a light cream garment, which is the same color that Saint Dominic would have been wearing. On her garment, besides her regular clothing, she had a symbol, a golden star just above her knee. So these are allusions. If you know everything that Mary wears in Guadalupe and the apparition of Juan Diego is very significant. Her title is very significant. What she says is very significant. So too here at Fatima, we see that she's wearing essentially what Saint Dominic would have been wearing along with that star. And then she says, I am Our Lady of the Rosary. So there's people who say, well, maybe she didn't appear. Mary now is taking the same title that was given to the apparition of Saint Dominic and that was reiterated after the Battle of Lepanto. And then what the atheists see, the unbelievers see, a fireball, the sun detaching from the sky, waving around left and right, coming towards the earth. Everybody thinks they're going to be burned up. And this is the exact same vision that Saint Dominic had when he received the rosary from Our Lady of the Rosary the first time. So this is a connection that most people don't know. I highlight it more beautifully in the book. But yes, absolutely. This is the rosary, so theologically profound, it could not have been developed by anyone else than the Queen of Heaven.
We're talking today with Gabe Castillo, the author of The Power of the Rosary from Sophia Institute Press. And we're touching on some of the great Marian miracles throughout history. And there are so many. It would take a long time. You have to pick up the book, of course, to dig into it. But the gold standard of Marian apparitions, Our Lady of Fatima, we might say. Of course, we think of Our Lady of the Rosary there. But also, there are other ones throughout history, Greifswald in Poland. But Our Lady of Lourdes is a famous one where we see the Rosary mentioned many times during those apparitions. Talk about the connection of Our Lady of Lourdes to the Rosary.
Absolutely. So it's very important also to understand like the historical climate of what's happening in Lourdes and in France. So this is just after the French Revolution, where much of Catholicism was being rejected and disheveled. In Lourdes, it's a small little town, and the faith was still extraordinarily strong there. And so when I love the little details of Marian apparitions that have been approved by the church. So in the case of Saint Bernadette, when she goes to the grotto, she sees the Virgin Mary in the grotto, and I love this detail. Bernadette's first instinct was to put her hand in her pocket and pull out her rosary. So Bernadette is a young woman who carries the rosary with her everywhere she goes, who has the instinct when there's trouble to pray the rosary. And I love the detail that when she began to pray the rosary, the Virgin Mary would pull on each bead as Bernadette was beginning her rosary, and she would keep track of all of the prayers. So that's a beautiful detail. Another thing that I absolutely love is that each of the apparitions of Lourdes each began when Bernadette would take out her rosary, and the apparitions would last the length of the rosary. So we are entering into a time where reason is starting to take over faith. The Virgin Mary interrupts and says, absolutely not. And in every single one of her apparitions, over her right arm, she has the rosary. And anybody who's ever been to Lourdes, it's one of the most beautiful, the holiest places on earth. And there's thousands of statues in all of the shops. It's really wonderful. It's almost, some people say it's like a Catholic Disneyland. But what's powerful is that for whatever reason anybody goes to Lourdes, they encounter Mary's Rosary Apostolate, because every evening in Rosary Square is one of the most beautiful processions that I've ever seen with my eyes. People praying the rosary every single evening, treating every single day as if it's a Marian feast day. The basilica there is dedicated to Our Lady of the Rosary. And what Our Lady does even more so, I said, whenever there's a church-approved apparition, everything Mary does and says is significant. And so she, because it's Our Lady of Lourdes. Our Lady of Lourdes said, I am the Immaculate Conception. When I hear those words, I am, it reminds me of Jesus in the garden saying, I am, and it blows everybody back. When Mary said, I am the Immaculate Conception, those similar kind of shockwaves went throughout the church, because before this is an ignorant, poor peasant girl, but now she's saying a sentence that would take theologians months to parse out and to try and figure out. And one of the greats, St. Maximilian Kolbe, does the best job of explaining what this means. But what it does is it shows to the theologians and the brainiacs, who sometimes can be more head than heart, hey, this is something serious. Praying the rosary is for everybody. It's for the intellectual giants as well as for the children. So Our Lady of Lourdes, absolutely a fountain of inspiration for the rosary.
Yeah, I agree with you about the beauty of that Marian procession at Lourdes. We filmed episode of Explore with the Miracle Hunter there, and we have some incredible footage of that nighttime procession with so many hundreds or thousands of people gathered out there, all seeking Mary together.
And the beautiful thing is, it's beautiful to see on tape, but that footage only captures like a fraction of the actual grace that is being poured out there. So many people leave there with a renewed devotion to the rosary and with an encounter with Mary.
Absolutely. We've been talking today with Gabe Castillo, author of the book, Power of the Rosary, from Sophia Institute Press. And Gabe, as we wrap up the interview today, talk about your hope for your book, how you can inspire people to learn about these miracles of the rosary and increase their Marian devotion in their lives.
Many people, unfortunately, have never heard of a little thing called mental prayer. It's a type of prayer. It's a three-step process to prayer that all of the doctors of the church said, this is the gateway to the spiritual life. All the saints in heaven, according to St. Alphonsus, practice mental prayer. St. Teresa of Avila said, if you don't pray in this way, you don't even need demons, because with your own hands, you carry yourself into hell. And unfortunately, this type of prayer has been lost. It's starting to have a resurgence. But what we do in this book specifically is to teach people how to pray the rosary with power. Maybe your listeners have heard somebody say something like, it's better to pray one Hail Mary with a lot of love and devotion than it is to pray 50 Hail Marys quickly. And so the devil uses that kind of statement to get people to not pray the rosary, because it's a difficult prayer. But the heart of the rosary, according to Louis de Montfort, according to St. John Paul II, the heart of the rosary is the meditation, is the mental prayer. All the saints would say who've commented on this topic have said, the words without the mental prayer is like a body without a soul. It's a corpse. It's good. It's beautiful. It's holy to say the Hail Mary. But the key is entering into the mystery. And what this book does better than any other book that I've ever seen is that it breaks down mental prayer, specifically how to do it in the Most Holy Rosary. And I've had many theologians and influential people in the church review the book, and they're like, we've never read anything like this before. So I encourage everybody to check it out, at least the section on praying the rosary using the steps of mental prayer.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Gabe Castillo, for the energy and research you put into this brand new book, The Power of the Rosary, available from Sophia Institute Press for people who have a Marian devotion and those people who want to grow their Marian devotion and want to use the rosary. You can find this book anywhere Catholic books are sold. Thank you so much, Gabe Castillo, for joining us on today's program.
Thank you, Michael. It's been an honor and a pleasure. Hopefully we'll see each other again.
Thank you, Gabe. And that was Gabe Castillo, author of The Power of the Rosary. Check that one out from Sophia Institute Press. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to ewtn.com/radio and check out the audio archives or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guest today, Patrick O'Hearn, author of Most Powerful Saints in Exorcisms, available from Sophia Institute Press. and also Gabe Castillo for joining us to talk about the power of the rosary. And check out my series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, which airs every week on Saturdays at 5 p.m. Central, 6 p.m. Eastern. And I'd like to thank you for joining me today on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.